I was completely wiped out.
Hello.
Not that way.
Okay.
Good.
So,
some of you may know that we have recently transitioned in this bookstore, so I am the new owner of the bookstore, and this is my second event in the bookstore, so I'm still taking crib notes while I host events, but thank you all very much for coming. I am excited that we are reinvigorating events at the store. Tonight's meeting, a collaborative effort with the folks at UW-Barclay, a good example of one of the many kinds of events I'm looking forward to bringing to this space. Seattle and its outlying areas is chock full of poets and readers of poetry and thinkers about poetry, and I'm looking forward to inviting our area's wide array of poetic personalities and communities to take advantage of this space in whatever way works with the brilliant work they are already engaged in. And thank you, Jean and Amaranth, who will be here. They just enthusiastically responded when I said, please do something, it's what you're doing is amazing, and they were just, have been lovely, and what you are doing up there is wonderful, so thank you for bringing it here. And I think I'm less organizer than spectator tonight, so I'm going to hand the mic over to Jean, who's going to sort of guide us from reader to reader and maybe offer a few highlights of some of the amazing events that happened and things said over the course of this weekend. Thank you all again for being here. And now, Jean.
Thank you to Billy for hosting this event. The five readers reading tonight did not read their poetry, actually, as all convergence. They were all panelists, or in the case of Tracy Morris, she's doing a performance which was close to poetry. And we're going to take the five readers in alphabetical order because that's the way we do things at UW-Bothell, because we have such great people coming that we just refuse to make those kinds of decisions, like who should read first and who should. So that's one of the highlights of UW-Bothell MFA Fall Convergence, is that we believe in the alphabet. So, yes, it was a really, really good Fall Convergence. It was called Form. We focused on form and formation, and people sort of attached to those words in various ways. And with some people hearing more traditional questions asked through form, and others hearing open field, non-regulatory forms, with everybody energized by some sense of innovation or not bowing to the culture that we're all living in. So some irreverence, some intervention, some disagreement with things as they are. Okay. So I'm happy to introduce John Beer. He's the author most recently of Lucinda, very engaging book. Before that, The Wasteland and Other Poems, and before that, The Poems. He was the editor of The Poems by Robert Lax. He teaches creative writing at Portland State. And while he's approaching, he had a great metaphor that poetry works with the deep tissue of the culture.
Well, thank you, Jean. Thanks to Open Books. It's really an honor and a pleasure to be here and be part of this reading. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So I'm going to read from Lucinda, which is, to borrow a term from Jean, a non-regulatory translation of a novella from by the German writer Friedrich Schlegel. For one thing, it goes from prose into verse, but there's a lot of other liberties at work. And I'm just going to read the first section of this book. One. Julian on Lucinda. Julian's the narrator of the book. Julian on Lucinda. And another thing. Every time I look outside, the people even Toonie, as they walk and talk, seem more and more like gray-green figures hardly daring to move. But in the holy loneliness that surrounds me these days, broken apart only by delivery folk and the occasional fiery hawk, I smoke and elect myself the uppermost hand. Green shouts at me from the windows, white blossoms drip like daisy cutters, and the golden fruit, it messes with my mind. And so, with both eyes open, I ache for the one thing that assumes myriad forms and yet remains the same. I mean your kiss. Whether you're a fresh-faced vixen in the first flush of youth, or strolling the streets of Park Slope with your second kid, or even if you're a little girl. Ahem. I breathe in the springtime, and sometimes it overpowers me, the dewy youth of the world in my own lungs. Therefore, the feelings or thoughts that well up in me cannot be suppressed, no matter how starkly my own fear or the general split self, the abject relation we bear to one another, crystallizes in the ruefully nutso mags one published in one's 20s. Mossy grave, could you please stop smacking your lips? A little extra polish. Before the perfect binding trend began in earnest, giving our efforts the quality of an ongoing enterprise that might have been its own culture revving up or indistinguishable from some larger culture, answering cloudbursts with battery-powered umbrellas, scattering private equity like barley. He used to talk about the identity of indiscernibles, but now he sketches models of utopia in the folds of origami monuments. I can't quite tell which I find more annoying. That's when I took a long, deep draft of nature, which, despite the rumors to the contrary, continues to exist eternally, concealing in itself death's murky prospect. I tried to keep myself from thinking too much. Good luck with that. All the hang gliders in California can't chase away the concept once it gets its hooks into you. I almost woke up in Cincinnati, but it was Covington, Kentucky, and in my pocket I found a dime store ring. Why not mix up your life for a second with that of your friends, taste their joy and pain as your own, or develop your life story the way Ron Howard worked his own out organically from Opie to the Oscar in one smooth curve of solid achievement. Why this interminable solitary prison? A pure fire streams through my heart, just like it streams through yours, Lucinda. But I take back what I said. It's not the kissing that matters so much, not the way your lips glisten like berries glistering in the rain. It's not the way your eyes seem to whisper a clear green breath to my smeary interior. Not your love, however mixed with sweet suffering, that matters to me in the white night of the mind. Would you believe it's the way you mix me up inside, until I'm not even sure I'm alive anymore, and the people sing, oh, the sad old poet, he's gone off his rocker, it wasn't a shocker. Not much of a shocker, but wait until the end. Oh, the strange old man, seeing faces where he should see names. It isn't a shame. Not much of a shame. But you and I, the people say, you and I, they say to each other, we'll gather together again when the golden fruit ripens. We'll come back at the end. I had gotten that far in my first letter to you when, in the midst of my ardent thoughts and most sensuous feelings, feelings about your lips and eyes and everything else left unsaid, as I planned to roll out in trim, stately figures, the true story of our passion and our struggles, jam-packed with enlightening stuff, including instructive misunderstandings and here and there a glimpse of pure being, not the kind that glitters like Florida or careens through muddy landscapes, but rather the transfiguring vision that fuses letter to letter as you read on, untutored, past words and sentences into the heart of the connection for which they stand, dumbly, like a flag the committee picked, but leaves behind in the corner as they sing the song that they prepared for all their lives, drowning out the air conditioner noise and converting everyone's private misery into a house of sound, stripped of time and the refined emotions that time introduces, until they find themselves miles away from home and unable to remember the name of the committee, the day on which it meets, its secret signs, or even their mother's maiden names. But lingering in a pervasive pear-like perfume, they confer each with the nearest neighbor before adjourning to strike out for adventures left untold within the pages I want to write for you, with their instructive misunderstandings, their flares of passion, and here and there a glimpse of what connects us more than your eyes, your lips, these fragile words. As I said, I plan to start rolling all this out. I heard a knock at the door. It was Walter Benjamin. Many an individual may dream of how he learned to walk, but that is of no help to him. He can walk now, but never again learn to walk, he told me, which I had to admit was an excellent point, and I invited him in to chase away the gloomy toil of composition with fine talk, us puffing on cigars. I was already thinking a little of how to present it. Benjamin and I were smoking on the cusp of the summer evening I'd begun. No, better to draw the audience in with a curious observation. Don't you think learning to walk is more fun than actually walking? Ambulating friends is overrated. You could take that as your cue. Glance up, frowning. Did you come up with that on your own? I can't take credit. It was Walter who stopped in one night. We were fairly close in those days. But even as I spun out the scenario, his phantasm was growing fainter. By the time I realized what was happening, I reached out my hand. It passed through cold, empty air. What did I learn from this? I'm glad you asked. You look so extraordinarily clever when you ask such things. It makes my life seem, well, like some kind of dream, a beautiful dream, unspooling under a sky untouched by bats, past windows without nooses. Then I remember that I still have to live in the real world. Not like David Broom, exactly, who lived on the real world, getting real with a bunch of strangers. You walk, but you can never learn to walk again. Reality to me is never realer than when I snap out of a reverie at the window and touch the dusty pane, aware that it resists the pressure of my hand, like the mind resists the pleasure of my words, always sifting underneath for the dirt content. I am not at a window now. You are not the screen into which I write. The gravel in the distance rises, throwing off a brilliant orange. It's fake, baby, all fake. The window's fake. The words are fake. Me sitting and typing, and meanwhile, you keep on fading away. I had gotten that far when I decided it was time to start making plans. Who could I invite to the inauguration? I made a list of the poets I knew, the economists, and I wanted to have a diplomat, though the only diplomat I've ever known was a casual acquaintance whose boyfriend didn't care for me at all. Sometimes I feel like my sufferings could fill a telephone book. And then I remember you and my hopes, which are hard to express, not so much because they're vague as because they couldn't ever exist in this broken old world with its hammers and shutters, its friendly baristas and long, dark, lonely rides. If only I had a better way of putting it, some kind of system for keeping track of the various harmonies and pleasures that form and astonish us. In other words, I need to sit right down and finish up this letter. You should make believe it really came from me. I'm going back now and adding all the passion and innocence that you couldn't find before. You knew it was there, but you just couldn't see it. Sitting in your room, twirling a pen around your finger, trying on a big red hat. It's not hard to give up your dream. What's hard is remembering how beautiful it all seemed. A childhood drive before you got your learner's permit. Three ducks hiding in the green grass, you emerging from the night to the brighter corridor, holding a letter in your hand. We could have gone anywhere already, but now we have to go to what comes next. Thank you.